We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
And joining us right now, the general manager of the New York Yankees as they get set to play four games against the Boston Red Sox, and that's Brian Cashman. Brian, John Jastrzemski, Evan Roberts, we're filling in for Mike. Good to talk to you. How are you?
I'm doing good, guys. How are you?
All right. When the trade deadline passes 4 o'clock, what was your feeling? Were you disappointed that you weren't able to get anything done?
Of course. I mean, your intent is to do, find some lanes that you can drive in that's going to allow you to improve the club. That's the whole process. Unfortunately, I was not able to do that. And so that leaves clearly disappointment, because obviously it's pencils down now and no other way to impact your club as we've been trying to do for a long time.
Do you think there's a why? Were the asking prices consistently high? Was there being one trade deadline impactful? Why do you think, because we look at your track record, you always do, well, most of the time, I can't say always, you do something, some major, some minor. Do you have a feeling on why nothing was able to come together on this trade deadline?
I know that the price tags were, sky high, and it doesn't mean I'm not willing to pay certain price tags. I mean, literally, there was not anybody untouchable in our system, depending on, certain players that we would be trying to acquire. So we made, players that we have in our system available, any one of them, from the top guy down, for very specific purposes. But in those cases, clearly the opposing teams are like no go. The players that we were targeting, especially, none of them were moved. That reinforces, all right, well, it wasn't, something, with us as much as, the sellers side of it was, they weren't really sellers. It was a unique deadline. I fall back on, as I've gone through this in my mind 1,000 times over, even when, I remember my, mentor Gene Michael at times, he's sitting there with a furrowed brow, he'd bang his pen on the desk a little bit with, just can't do that. Can't do that. Like, and some of the requests would come in and he's frustrated, as I was frustrated, because there's things I wanted to do, but I wasn't going to shoot a first, second, or third born for minimal impact coming back that may or may not, or you could argue weren't really going to make a difference one way or the other. I remember having a conversation within our war room going, hey guys, we're here to win a championship. And if shooting the following type of talent requests that's coming our way, the demands that we were having, for lesser talented guys that even though they were moved elsewhere, maybe within the, this deadline, but they arguably weren't going to make us, noticeably better to feel good enough to make those moves. And I was like, we're not doing that. We're shooting. If we shoot some of these, bullets, it's got to be something we feel like this is going to make a difference. Otherwise, I'm not doing it. And I said, that's the criteria we're setting and have always set. And so I think our history is we usually do things. And the fact that we didn't, I think, speaks more to the fact that there are some impossible things, the impossible things that weren't available didn't get moved, and the possible things that were available, the price tags just were way out of whack. And then I see when the dust settles with a lot of other clubs that did not make moves either, that are in the same boat trying to finish their teams off, whether it was the Cardinals, the Dodgers, the Red Sox, or whomever, they didn't make any moves either, not because of lack of effort, because I'm assuming and seeing those quotes from them in their hometowns kind of matches up, which is it wasn't for lack of effort,
right.
Lack of interest, and I am disappointed that I can't add to what I've already got, which I feel is a good team, and that's the fallback. We got a really good team here, and guys are wired really well, and my job is to do everything in my power within reason to improve upon it. But now, plan B was always, if I was forced to go on that lane, is to fall back and try to continue to improve on what we have that's active, that isn't performing up to capabilities, and then wait for some pretty, tremendous talented players that are currently residing on our disabled list, which is now called the injured list, and wait for the Stantons and the and you know Luke Voit to return, as well as obviously more importantly the Severinos and the Betanzas and Loizaga, who's obviously going to have another rehab outing here shortly.
Well, Brian, you mentioned Severino and Betances. That would be like adding a big-time arm. No doubt about it. Two big-time arms. Guys who have made the All-Star team in the past. Who's closer to getting back to action? Would it be Dylan Betances or Luis Severino?
It's a tougher question because one's a starter, one's a reliever. So Sevy is ahead of Betances in the throwing program, and he has a chance maybe to get on the bump as early as next week and start elevating from the flat ground throwing program to throwing off the mound. But being a starter, pitch count and where you can take him, is a much longer process. So even though he's ahead of Dylan in the throwing program so far, it's hard for me to predict really, once Dylan gets on the mound, his thing can come a lot quicker. So obviously the general protocols are flat ground throwing program, evolved to bullpen sessions, then batting practice sessions, and then rehab games. So, but one being a starter, one being a reliever, it's still tougher to kind of thread the needle on, who's ultimately going to be activated first if they can finish off properly.
Brian, as you're going through the process and you're trying to make deals down at the last minute, what was your reaction when you find out the Houston Astros acquired Zach Greinke?
I mean, I didn't have a reaction. He wasn't a choice for us, just obviously because of the full no trade. And my expectation going into this deadline was that a lot of the clubs looking for similar things as we were, Houston on starting pitching and stuff. I expected them to get one, and they did. Certainly didn't expect us not to get one. But I'm not surprised by any of our competitors. They're very very good at what they do. Obviously, that's why they have great teams, and you expect them to continue to improve upon things, just like teams, I'm sure, expected us to do the same. But it just didn't work out in our favor this time.
So with Greinke, and you mentioned he had a full no-trade clause, there are other guys with no-trade clauses, but sometimes you still pursue them because you never know. They may waive that no-trade clause. Was he just the kind of guy you looked at and said, I don't think he has an interest in coming in New York, and I don't know if this is going to be a good fit, because Madison Bumgarner's got a full no trade, and I would assume you were probably on the phone quite a bit with the Giants talking about him.
I talked to everybody, except for I never bothered to waste my time talking to Dave Dombrowski, who obviously I respect and stuff. But other than that, I talked to everybody and on a lot of different circumstances. And then obviously, Zach Greinke now joining the Astros makes them even that much more formidable. But I'd rather not, respect for obviously the tampering side or privacy side, not really go down that road of, whether he would have been of interest or possible or fit here or not. It just, there's a number of guys that were in the marketplace that had no trades to the Yankees, him being one of them. It is what it is.
Do you get the sense, I get it, just as a baseball fan, that there were teams who traded pitchers that had no interest in dealing with you? Not you personally, but the Yankees, like the Cleveland Indians. They moved Trevor Bauer. It would have been crazy, in my mind, for them to move Trevor Bauer to you guys because you guys could compete in the postseason. Even to a degree, Marcus Stroman. I know you guys made a deal last year for Jay Happ, but Stroman's younger, year of control. Did you get the sense that with those two teams, maybe they were putting more of a premium on you for competitive reasons?
I don't know if I would want to say that. I think I think all things being equal, if you're within the division or within a pennant race within your same league, then if all things are equal and you could send that talent elsewhere, that would break the tie. And that's in fairness to everybody. So if I had a chance to send a guy, to the National League versus right here in my own division that I'd have to deal with moving forward a lot, and it was the same deal, I'm going to go to the National League with that guy. So I understand all that. I do think there are some teams that are less willing for various reasons to want to, help us or, than others. But that, again, at the end of the day, that could be, an old wives' tale too at times. That could, maybe there's some validity to it. But, in fairness to everybody out there, I do think that, again, if all things are equal, some of those things can come into play. But there was a lot of things that, there was a lot of inequality as we tried to match things up with people. And in fairness too, some of the things that were our challenges to get past is the way our system currently sits. We're really strong at the lower levels. I mean, we can match up with just about anybody, or sit above most with, if you're talking about the talent levels from A ball and down. But obviously a lot of teams are looking for that stuff that they don't have to wait on.
Right.
And they're looking for impact. So obviously if you're dealing with our upper levels, you're talking Debbie Garcia and then Clint Frazier. And then there's, you know, there's still a lot of number of different players you can play on, but not necessarily in that impact category. And then you drop down into the Estevan Florials, for instance, who got a broken wrist in spring training, you know, and then so he's, you know, he got offline for a long period of time and just now he's back online, and then trying to find his groove and get the performance levels back. You know, Michael King had a stress reaction, so he hasn't pitched basically all year, and he was one of our upper level guys. So we've had a lot of injury issues that hit right before the deadline. You know, Albert Abreu went down with a biceps tendonitis and goes right on the DL. He was obviously another, you know, someone that people could have asked about. So we, you know, a couple of our catchers, our first and second pick from 2 years ago, had season-ending injuries sometime here in the last month with Anthony Sigler and Bro. And so a lot of our prospect capital took hits that, you know, made some of these matches harder that would chase our opposing teams that we're matching up with or trying to match up with down more into the, you know, high A or South Atlantic Charleston team, you know, that we had. And some teams just didn't want to go that far down the food chain to try to do things. So we try to be creative. We made a lot of very aggressive offers and thought outside the box because we were forced to at times and have to. And I think people, if they had a chance to look behind the scenes about some of the offers that were made that were turned down, they'd be shocked. And also, you know, worried that, hey, I'm glad the opposing team didn't make that, because some of them were pretty unique offers, but we just never matched up. In the end, we, you know, our what we were willing to do, you know, didn't match with what teams were demanding from us, and I feel like we had no choice but to push away from the table. And do I regret not improving the club? Yes. Do I regret not doing the deals that were in front of me? No.
Do you regret anything? Sorry, Jay. Do you regret anything from the offseason or even the Dallas Keuchel situation, knowing what ended up having with the market, what happened to the market, like looking back at going after Corbin in free agency or Keuchel last month, you have any regrets about those two guys?
None whatsoever. We put our best foot forward on Keuchel, and if Keuchel wanted to be here, he would have come here. I mean, although the offer that was taken with the Braves, the way the negotiations would work, you know, again, if this was the place he wanted to be, he would have demanded for his agent to call us directly back and say, there's just a million and a half or whatever the number was, a separation, and I'd rather be here in New York versus there in Atlanta. That never happened. We never got the, you're on the 5 yard line. If you move the ball, you know, 10 more yards or 5 more yards, he's yours. That never happened. It was just, here's our offer, and there wasn't the, you know, discussion back and forth of trying to close it out to finish it off. It was, you know, no, it wasn't that at all. So I assume when the dust settles, he took the best deal, or he took a lesser deal, you know, compared to other deals elsewhere, because the place he wanted to be was in Atlanta, I respect that, but it wasn't the type of negotiation as I described where here's our number. It was a good, strong offer. It was very close and not too far under where he wound up signing. But at the end of the day, if this is where he would have wanted to be, it would have, you know, they would have made that happen. And since they didn't try that, then I assumed that Atlanta was the place he wanted to be, more so than here anyway.
The general manager of the New York Yankees, Brian Cashman, John Jastrzemski, Evan Robertson for Mike right here on The Fan. All right, Brian, so you guys have brought in so many different starting pitchers over the years. Guys like C.C. Sabathia, Mike Mussina, Masahiro Tanaka, they've been slam dunks. Then you see other guys, they're not fit for pitching in New York, whether it's a guy like Sonny Gray, who is now gone, whether it's somebody like Javi Vasquez. So from your perspective, from the front office's perspective, what's tougher to evaluate? The idea of a pitcher coming to the American League East, pitching at Yankee Stadium, pitching at Fenway Park, a lot of hitter-friendly parks, or is it that element of putting on the pinstripes and wearing that Yankee uniform and pitching in New York? Like, what is tougher for you guys in the front office to kind of handicap when you bring a guy in?
I mean, I you touched on it all. I think it's all relative and accurate. You know, clearly the American League East with the smaller ballparks, whether you got Baltimore, New York, Boston, you know, are more difficult challenges, places to play, and the offenses are typically much stronger than elsewhere. Obviously playing in a bigger market like New York, is, you know, can be something that you know, is a difference maker. But we've run through a lot of players that have, you know, whether it's, you know, we had Evaldi here. I remember we got, whether it's Evaldi, whether it's Pineda, whether it's just a number of different guys, you know, Contreras, who then went on with massive success to lead the White Sox to a World Series. And we've run a lot of guys out there that it clear was, well, we got the right guy because he's the type of pitcher that has success at this level for a long period of time, but not, you know, maybe it didn't play out the way to the full potential it could here. And that could come up for various reasons. Even the Carl Pavanos of the world that when we had here, he never really performed here because he was hurt. But he pitched in a number of different postseasons and World Series, whether it was with the Marlins or you saw what he was doing towards the end of his career with the Minnesota Twins. And you saw him as a very effective, you know, difference-making starter at those time frames. It just sometimes it's timing, sometimes it's injuries, sometimes it is the market. I mean, I know dealing in the past, you know, Randy Johnson, you know, towards the end of his career, this was not, you know, I don't think the fun house for him. You know, that doesn't take away from, you know, that Hall of Fame competitor that he was. It just turned out to be a fact. So it's hard to navigate all that stuff, but, you know, the ultimate, you know, you may ultimately make your decision the best you possibly can and then try it out. And if it works, you know, great. And if it doesn't work, you got to get out of it and move on and, you know, reshuffle the package. And that's why the one thing we find the most success with, or have had the most success with, I think, is promoting from within and it coming from your system. For whatever reason, you know, that doesn't seem to be as much of an issue when they come through your system versus obviously importing guys.
Well, Cash, you mentioned coming through the system. Davey Garcia, is this a guy we could see in Yankee pinstripes by the end of the year in September?
Might, you know, he certainly, you know, he's done a lot already for a 20-year-old. He checks a lot, and he checks all the boxes you're looking for you know, someone that, you know, has a, you know, the opportunity and potential for a really strong, promising major league career. You know, you don't see guys at 20 years old, you know, doing what he's done at AA, and he's now just entered the AAA. He's going through some adjustments at the AAA level now. I think it's three or four starts, but the ball now, he's using the major league ball, you know, from, you know, AAA on up is used the major league ball. So that's usually an adjustment period, which he's going through. So he's checking all the boxes, you know, for what he's shown us thus far. He was certainly asked about in almost every category in these trade deadlines. Some was very offensive requests and others were more appropriate, but we got to finish his development off and, you know, if he shows us that he's ready to help, if he does help here this year, it'd be out of the pen.
Right.
I think our potential realistic choices going forward are just get Seve back, Betances back, Loaizaga back, and then if Davey Garcia pushes himself into you know, contention for a role here in September, we'll do that. If it feels like he needs a little bit more time to finish off, we won't do that, you know, and so it's just to see, we'll just have to wait and see how the rest of the, you know, minor league season plays out for him to see how legitimately he pushes himself in play or not for us in 2019.
I was thinking about all the different Met GMs you've negotiated with over the last 19 years. You've outlasted all of them, whether it was Steve Phillips, Jim Duquette, Sandy Alderson, Omar Minaya. Now you got Brody, and did you take your conversations with him serious? I'm sure you did, but did you get the sense that the Mets were ever serious about making a deal with you guys?
We had a lot of conversations. You know, there, you know, was a lot of good feedback both ways. You know, so I would say it's more likely than not. You know, first of all, it's less likely for us probably ever to do anything just because of proximity. You know, does that make it right? Does that make it wrong? It doesn't really matter. But when you're dealing with, you know, they're an inner city rival, or if you're dealing with a rival within your division, especially, the best way for either party to match up is when one's going one direction and the other's going the other. And clearly they're closing the gap. I might be wrong. You guys would know they're either four or five games out of the wild card right now. They're on a 7-game winning streak.
It's
something like that that's accurate. They've reinforced their club. They believe they have enough right now, and they fortified it with the deadline. And they're also, you know, playing into 2020 as well. So that's not anything. Those are not statements that we are out of this and we are done and we are rebuilding. That's not what's going on over there. So that, I think, would create more of an atmosphere for, you know, anybody to really match up, you know, that's trying to go for it at the same time. So I would leave it at that. My conversations with Brody were professional. There were numerous. We've known each other a long time, obviously him on the side of the agency before he's now a general manager. I like dealing with him. But they're going for it. We're going for it. That makes it harder for us to really do anything together as much as anything else.
Cash, you've been at this a long time. You've made deals with the Mets on the minor scale, whether it was the Armando Benitez trade, that three-teamer with Ventura and David Justice. So can you ever envision making a big-time trade, a big-time deal with the New York Mets? Could you see that happening at some point in time?
You know, I think that it's in both teams' interest always to try to do what's best for their franchises. And if that means a small deal or a big deal, I don't think either one should ever be afraid of it. And, you know, I think, you know, 1,000 discussions, all, you know, throughout the game will only lead to maybe one match. You know, so as I've done more deals probably than anybody sitting in the game right now because I've been a general manager for so long. So it's not that I'm afraid to do a deal, but I did 1,000 discussions, 1,000,000 discussions, whatever you want to call it, here in the last 3 weeks, that, you know, since our last deal or legitimate impact deal for the 25-man roster that was making a trade for Encarnacion. And since then, I can't tell you the amount of, you know, proposals, you know, going and coming that I've had between now and July 31st that led nowhere. And that's just the nature of the beast. You're constantly sword fighting with and playing with different various ideas, you know, internal, and then sharing them externally. And every now and then you get lucky or unlucky if it doesn't work out to match up with somebody.
Do you have I definitely have an opinion on this. I'm curious what you think, because you've been doing it for 1,000,000 years. Do you have, in your opinion, your best trade deadline deal, thinking back to all the deals you've made for the last 20 years? Because to me, I think it's a blowout. I'm curious if you, as the man who actually made the trades, has an opinion on that.
Well, I don't want to say, like, if, like, I think people just think deadline deal would be like July 31st. To me, the deadline is for the most part everything after the amateur draft is
yes.
over.
Yeah, the and one so I'm thinking of is in
David
like
Justice.
David
was,
Justice,
yeah, David Justice
yes.
was the biggest difference maker, and everybody. And the thing I like doing the most is I like mostly when no one knows whatever we're going to do until we do it, you know, because you don't want to invite everybody to the party while you're trying to build the negotiation package. And so the fact that that one happened when everybody was focused on Juan Gonzalez and Sammy Sosa, and I can't remember the third hitter at the time off the top of my head. There were three, you know, major names that are out there that were being written about constantly. And then when the dust settled, we pulled Justice out of Cleveland, and he remade our entire season the rest of the way, and we don't win without that transaction. So that had a massive impact.
Oh, yeah. I think he hit 28, 29 home runs, was the ALCS
the
MVP
ball
that year.
Still hasn't landed in the upper deck, Cash. I don't know. It still might be going.
That might have been the loudest I've ever heard the old stadium, to be honest. And you know, certainly around for a lot of big moments and stuff. But unfortunately, I don't want to be here talking to you on the phone about deals like that were so long ago. The effort was to try to get a deal that would impact us like that, and unfortunately, I got to man up and tell you I wasn't unable to pull one off. But I, at the same time, you know, it wasn't for lack of effort, even though that means nothing to our fan base, I'm sure.
One last thing from me: is there an innings limit on Domingo Germán?
Yes.
Do you want to reveal it?
No.
Will you slow him down over the next month and a half? So will we as fans notice, you know, Domingo being pulled after 5 or maybe skipping a start?
Well, I can tell you this. He already had his time out, for instance, that actually certainly cushioned the blow.
Right.
Because when he was hiding from us, like all these guys seem to do, regardless, when he was hiding from us, that hip flexor he was dealing with, and, you know, for 3 starts, and then we had to put him on the IL for, I can't remember how long it was.
So is that enough then? So is he good to go the rest of the way? No restrictions?
You'll have to watch how the season plays out, but that certainly allowed us to get that breather in there on the arm and the innings limitations that come with him. But thankfully we have him, because, you know, he's really been a breath of fresh air as he's taken the next steps. And obviously with Seve going down, he essentially replaced Seve, why we needed it or expected a Seve to be here.
Cash, final one for me. Gary Sanchez, who was an all-star catcher first half, gets hurt. What is the latest as far as the timetable for Sanchez?
He's doing great. I think we have a decision to make about rehab games versus plug and play, and he's really close. So it's not going to be really that long from the time frame that he is, you know, I think around that 10-day, whether it's 11, 12, 13, it depends on whether we put him in a rehab assignment or not.
Thank you, Brian. We appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Brian. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Bye. Brian Cashman, general manager of the New York Yankees.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.